Okay, I think we're about ready to go. Thank you all for coming. Apologies on the slightly delayed start. Apparently, we had to wait for a few bits of equipment. So, we're going to talk today about the SharePoint Development Framework, or the SharePoint Framework as it's known, and what that means moving forward, give you a bit of an insight into how this thing ticks. So, about me, I'm Gavin. Hi. If you want to get hold of me, I'm on Twitter. My email's firstname.lastname@teamintegen.com. I'm a SharePoint Server MVP. Well, I was until they rebadged us. Now I'm a MOS MVP, a Microsoft Office Servers and Services MVP, which is kind of started my SharePoint journey back with MOS. I've been working with the Office system since 2002, when I was doing contract work for companies in Christchurch. I'm a developer, have been a developer all of my adult life, and will continue to be building stuff long after people tell me I should be post-technical. I was lucky enough to attend the SharePoint Dev Kitchens earlier this year and get sort of an early insight into this stuff. And I want to share some of what I've learned over the past 8, 9 months playing with this stuff. So, what are we covering today? What the heck is the SharePoint framework? How's it different from what we did before? I am going to do quite a few demos and show you what the code looks like. If you think I'm diving too deep, tell me. If you don't think I'm diving deep enough, tell me. If you've got questions, ask. You're not going to learn just sitting there if you've got a question. I want you guys to get as much out of this as you possibly can. We're going to look at how we talk to SharePoint and how we can integrate with other data sources. Well, we'll talk about that. So, what the heck is the SharePoint framework? Just pause for a sec here and think about where we've come. So, we've got another new development model. Actually, how many of you around the room have grabbed a copy of the preview software and tried it out? Couple of people. All right. How many of you are what I would call traditional SharePoint developers building on-premises solutions using WSPs, solutions, features? Okay. How many of you are developing using the add-in model? One guy. Well done. And how many of you are doing something different from what I've talked about? Few. Okay, cool. Does anyone know what the number one most popular web part in all of Office 365 is? Yes, that guy's got it. The script editor web part, because it lets developers do what they want to do inside Office 365 using JavaScript. Pretty good thing. So this is Microsoft going, well, things are moving that way. JavaScript is the future. Open web development is a pretty good way of enabling people to modify the platform and provide customizations that, unlike our traditional customizations, don't run inside the server processes. So it's actually a lot harder as a developer, being either sloppy or malicious, to take down your SharePoint farm. You could still do it. Trust me, you can still do it, but it's harder. So Microsoft has seen that, and they're bringing out the SharePoint framework. This is preview software. It's not production ready. So don't go betting the farm on it just yet, but you should start learning how this works. You should hopefully have an understanding at the end of today of what's involved, what the process looks like, and what the things you need to learn and take back to your organization are. Let's talk about the core, the framework components. So the SharePoint framework, yes, it's a new developer experience, but it's also a new user experience. Who's in Office 365 right now? Okay, who's on premises only? Okay, sort of 70-30 split towards the cloud. That's healthy. So at the moment, this is a cloud-based offering. It will likely come to an on-premises offering via a feature pack in the future. But one of the big things is this is a new user experience. You would have seen a lot of noise as the classic mode pages have been retired for some people, or the new modern experiences have been rolled out. So this modern movement towards a fast, fluid, responsive website is driving a lot of what the tooling is going to support with the SharePoint framework. We now have these modern page canvases, so we don't have a web part zone anymore. It's gone. Well, at least from the user perspective, we just have this canvas that we can drop things into. So web parts, we can drop text in there. We can use it as like a rich text editor as we used to. Provides things like JavaScript resource management and some of the client-side APIs. So there's been massive investment by Microsoft because guess what? They're using this tooling to build out their new experiences. It's not like it used to be. Microsoft used to have sort of this inside track where they could get access to stuff that we couldn't as third-party developers. So there used to be sort of first-party APIs that Microsoft were able to use because they're Microsoft. And there's the stuff that the rest of us used, and we're like, there's got to be a better way. Microsoft have instituted a rule internally that if you're building new things for SharePoint and for the Office 365 experiences, you're going to use this tooling. You're not going to use some internal closed-off thing. Because guess what? As those developers experience the pain that we go through, they're going to take steps to make it better. Because there's nothing better than to make a developer motivated than to annoy them. So part of the things that the SharePoint framework delivers is packaging tools. So the ability for us to create the equivalent of a WSP in this brave new world. And to look at deployments. And over top of that, we've got build processes and tooling. Things that we would typically expect from the Visual Studio IDE, we're now getting in a slightly different form, in a more modern and open web standard manner. So who's heard of the Workbench? A couple of people. Okay, the SharePoint Workbench, it's a special page that you can run on your local machine, so you don't need to have SharePoint to build for SharePoint. How crazy is that? I can be flying across the Pacific Ocean and cutting SharePoint code effectively, and I don't need to have a connection to an actual SharePoint server. You're going to need one by the time you roll it out, but you know, you can actually be productive in offline scenarios without having to carry the world's heaviest laptop that can run your SharePoint farm as a VM. That's a pretty big win for me. These other two things, Yeoman templates and gulp-based build processes. Who's heard of those? Oh, a few people, cool. All right, so how does this differ from what we had previously? Well, the first thing, the big thing, is most of this tooling is open source. All right, traditionally Microsoft's tooling has been, we build Visual Studio, you don't get to see how that works. Here it is, use it. Now, this open source tool, you can actually grab the source code, look at what's going on. If you think something needs changing, you can raise a bug via GitHub, go, raise an issue, I think you should do this. Here's why. And it might happen. There's actually a better chance of it happening via that process than there was previously. You can actually even make code improvements to some of these tools. Make your own patches, make your own versions of them. The world's your oyster. So you'll notice this dotted line here. A little bit loud as I get close to that speaker. that dotted line sort of represents choice. So the build process and tooling that is provided by the SharePoint framework out of the box is what you get here. Yeoman, Gulp, Node, etc. You can have a bit of flexibility there if you really know what you're doing. But the other side of the dotted line, JavaScript frameworks, code editors, free reign. Choose anything you want, choose what works for you. If you want to use React, go for it. If you want to be an Angular developer, go for it. Actually, on that, how many people have we got in the room who are building apps at the moment using Angular? Either one or two. Okay, a few. Anybody using React at all? Okay, Knockout? No one? Oh, one guy? Yep. Plain old jQuery? Yeah. Okay, so doesn't matter. All of those two options are valid. Microsoft's not going to railroad you into a specific approach anymore. You have freedom of choice. You want to use a code editor, you pick it. You don't have to use Visual Studio, you know, professional edition that requires 4 gigs of RAM to start up efficiently. You can use something like VS Code or Atom or you name it. Let's look at the tooling side by side. Back in the day, we built tool stuff to run on the server. We had IIS Express to host our websites with the Microsoft.NET framework, and it ran well. We had NuGet. Well, we still use NuGet as a package management tool for .NET builds. It works all right. Works pretty well. We had MS Build. Who knows what MS Build is? Okay, so when you hit F5, MS Build is doing the stuff to build up your solution and put that inside the running copy of IIS Express. We built in C#. We had project templates. So we go file, new SharePoint project. This time I want to do a web part project. And it would spit out a bunch of files that, and we'd go and edit it. We've got all those, again. But we just have different flavors now. We use Node as our web server. So that's a JavaScript-powered web server. It's fast, it's lightweight. This thing called NPM, the Node Package Manager. Again, it's it's just a package manager. It's quite useful. Sometimes it's painful, but mostly it does gets the job done. Who's heard about this thing called Yarn? Crickets? Okay, we'll ignore that. Cool. Gulp. Gulp is your build tool. Gulp is what does the compilation of your code, the automatic building and running of the website when you... It's the equivalent of your F5 process. We're going to write in TypeScript. You could write in plain old JavaScript. Actually, who in the room knows how to write JavaScript well? Can you teach me? When it comes to JavaScript, I was the guy who would go, all right, I need to debug this. Alert, this thing happened. Alert, this thing happened. Come on, you all did it, didn't you? Yeah. TypeScript, it's like JavaScript. It's a superset of JavaScript, and it adds typing over top of JavaScript. It has a whole bunch of IntelliSense and tools to make you a lot more productive as a developer. So if you're going to learn one new language this year, and you're in the SharePoint space, I highly encourage you to learn TypeScript. Or maybe ES6, which is, you know, it's good too. It's the next version of JavaScript that no one's actually using yet, unless you're super hardcore. And then we have this thing called Yeoman, which is the equivalent of the Visual Studio project templates. This actually makes our base set of code for us when we want to run. One of the other things that Microsoft are doing, they want to help us build good-looking things that fit inside SharePoint. So, you know, back in the day, building web parts, we have to write our own styles or understand the styles that Microsoft had shipped inside SharePoint to make those web parts look like they belonged, right? There's this cool thing called the Office UI Fabric. It's a design language that Microsoft have come up with to help represent exactly and allow us to copy and make things that look exactly like they belong inside Office 365, inside the Office clients. It's available out of the box with the SharePoint framework. it really makes it a lot easier to build and design web parts that look like they belong inside SharePoint. There are a bunch of different flavors. So you can get packages for React, plain old JavaScript. There's an Angular flavor of this, which has been built by the community. There's an iOS version if you're building iOS apps, or you can just use the style sheets. So plain old CSS. All right, that's enough talking about what this stuff is. Let's have a look at it. So how do we get started? We need to install some stuff. So first of all, we need Node. Version, the long-term support version, not the new version. It doesn't work if you go for the 5-dot versions. NPM version 3. By default, long-term support version of Node ships with NPM version 2. If you're running on a Windows box, you're going to have a bad time. Just upgrade it. Python version 2.7, not 3.x because they changed the syntax and it just they're not compatible. Visual Studio, or the C++ build tools from Visual Studio. Yeoman, Gulp. Well, that's a heck of a lot of stuff. Oh, I've got to set up. Actually not that hard. Install Node using the MSI off their site. Open up your command prompt. Update NPM to version 3. Install everything you need if you don't have Visual Studio, including the C++ build tools and Python. Install Yeoman and Gulp. Hey, you're actually almost ready to build a web part. So, next thing, we need to get those Yeoman templates specific to SharePoint. NPM install. This dash G you've seen, that means install it globally so it's available in any directory on my box rather than just right where I am right now. And then once that's installed, we can say, yo, at Microsoft / SharePoint. And that's going to start off this process to template out your new web part project. There's really good documentation on this. The GitHub repository is fantastic. Get in there, try it out. If you have problems, raise issues. So, hello world. Let's see how this goes. Which desktop am I on? Not that one. Okay, so first thing we do is we're going to make a new directory. Is that visible enough? No. How's that? You guys read that okay in the back? Cool. So we're going to make a new directory. Yo, at Microsoft. So the at Microsoft bit is because Microsoft managed this package themselves. It's called a private scope. So we have to say at Microsoft to say that we're going to download, use the Node package from the private scope of Microsoft, and we're going to use SharePoint, the SharePoint generator for Yo, or Yeoman. Now this is going to ask us a few questions eventually. If the demo guards don't... Hey, there we go. So, what's the name of my solution? If I just hit enter, I accept the default. We'll do that. I can pick a folder where it's going to go. We're going to stay with this one. We're going to go Hello World Web Part because that's what every good developer does, right? Give it a nice description. And now I'm presented with a choice. So, in the spirit of democracy, I have choices between no particular front-end framework, React, or Knockout. Who votes for React? Who wants to see plain old JavaScript? Slight edge. Anyone for Knockout? Plain old JavaScript. It's actually gone and created all the files that are necessary right now. What's going to happen now is it's going to reach out and install a lot of packages and dependencies. I'm actually just going to stop that because, well, you don't want to see that. It takes a wee while, and the internet connection can be a little sketchy. So, in the interest of, here's one I prepared earlier. I made one of each just in case you guys chose one that I hadn't prepared. So we're going to open up this vanilla one. I'm going to open my preferred text editor, VS Code. And we'll take a look at what's inside here. That is actually going to be terrible for you guys to see. Color preference. That's probably going to be easier for you guys to see, and we'll just crank up the zoom a little. So, what we get out of the box is a bunch of files. First thing, we get this gulp file. It tells me nothing, which kind of sucks. Gulp is our build process. However, we can get information about how gulp works from the command line. So I'll go into that in a little bit. The interesting parts of this are in the config folder. So we've got these configuration files that are used for different build processes. So this config.json, it has definitions for entry points into the system, what the compiled JavaScript library we're going to run is, and what the external dependencies for this are. So we've got all the SharePoint client libraries referenced here. We've got references to React and Office Fabric, if we happen to want to choose to use that. And it actually has some support for localization out of the box, which is really nice. Who's tried to do localization in JavaScript before? One brave guy. How was that? Yeah. So it's really nice that they're thinking about this. We have options for deployment into Azure, so we can actually have a script to actually push this into an Azure Blob store. Information about packaging, so the name of our solution. So if you've ever built old school web parts, some of these things are looking familiar because the framework's actually relatively similar. All right, you'll see we've got this node modules folder here. I said that we were going to install a lot of node modules. I really wasn't kidding. I kind of hate seeing this in here, so let's get rid of it. If you use VS Code, this is a really handy little thing. Files exclude. That actually IntelliSense that for me. That's handy. Get a comma here. And all we need to do is add a glob that identifies node modules. And that config file updated, you just see the node modules disappeared. I can do the same with the typings folder. That's useful for TypeScript. I don't need to see it in my day-to-day work, but it just tidies up a lot. One of the other things you might want to do is add a couple of entries into your search exclude here. Because what happens when our process takes that TypeScript we've got and compiles it, it turns it into JavaScript, which is a useful output, but we don't really care about it for the purposes of building our code on a day-to-day basis. And it has these things called .map files, which allow our debuggers to map between the JavaScript that's running in the browser and the TypeScript. So it's really good for letting us just put breakpoints in our TypeScript code that we've been writing, and the browser's still running the transpiled JavaScript. Cool. So in the source folder, this is where the action happens. By default, this ships with a simple tests.js which we can hook into to run tests. There is a single test in here which actually does nothing. But it's really important to note that if you start adding more tests here, we can just run JavaScript tests against the code we've written. So if you break down your solution well, you can actually start testing the components you build. And you're testing your code, right? All right, main entry here, our hello world webpart.ts. You'll see here that we've got this little error. It's not because what they've shipped is broken, it's because I haven't built anything yet, so that module doesn't actually exist. We'll drill into that. So you'll see here our hello world webpart extends our base client-side webpart. Can you guys see this okay in the back? Cool. That base client-side web part is shipped by Microsoft. It gives us access to a whole bunch of stuff out of the box. So it gives us access to the page context, things like the title of the web that we're operating in, and a really handy helper class for making HTTP requests. So we don't have to do hacks like going and finding the form digest element in the page and making sure we include that with our requests anymore. Microsoft didn't have that capability back in February. They do now. The stuff is updating really quickly. I think we're on drop 5 now since the first public preview was shipped in August. So you can see they're revving on this really quickly. It's awesome. What we have in our web part is, hey, we've got some inline HTML. Not a big fan of this personally, but it works. You'll see here we've got this thing called styles.helloworld. This is kind of weird, right? We've got this inline JavaScript object to give me a class name. What's happening in the background is during the build of this, all the styles that we have defined in our SAS file, so we've got hello world, we've got container, they're going to get compiled and they're going to have a unique identifier appended to them so that if you happen to have multiple web parts from different projects dropped into the same page, and they had, you know, they both had a dot container defined, you're not going to have conflicts because they'll each have a unique identifier appended to that container class. Really handy and really important that you don't go stomping on other developers' toes. There's a simple manifest here that allows us to define some of our property pane entries and, you know, what version we are, that kind of stuff. And there's this thing called the WebPart properties interface. So TypeScript, it's a typed language. We have types. So I can say that I have an iWebPart props, which actually just exposes a property for me from another object. Pretty handy. All right, let's grab my command prompt back. Let's close that one. Grab this one. So if I'd like to see that code running, all I have to type in is gulp serve. That's going to transpile, or it's going to do some code analysis using tslint. So basically, sort of think of fxcop, but for TypeScript. It's going to take the TypeScript, turn it into JavaScript. It's going to take that SAS file, turn it into CSS. It's going to create an output, and it's going to wire it up, and it's going to spin up a node server, which serves up a copy of the SharePoint workbench for me so that I can see what's happening. Cool. You can see all the steps here are really clearly spelt out what's happening as we go. We've got things like this thing called Webpack. That's kind of cool. It's a packaging technology which gives us nice small bundles of JavaScript that really don't do too much other than just give you the code you need. So we've got the SharePoint workbench. Let's add my Hello World web part. All I have to do is click on the little plus sign here. I can add any number of them, delete them. Gives me a warning. I've got this edit button here, which opens up the property pane. You can see as I'm typing here, this is constantly updating the web part property that's actually exposed in my web part. Kind of cool. That behavior is configurable. You can turn it off so it doesn't update till you close the panel. So that might be really important if you're using the input value to make some form of asynchronous request across the wire and you don't want to do that as people are typing. Kind of useful. There are means of adding validations to this. It's a pretty well thought out system. What's even cooler though is let's grab, hey, that's gone over there. Cool. That wrong thing. This one over there. So if I make a change to the code, let's just do some snapping here and open this, close that away. It's a lot harder when you're zoomed in quite as much. Let's just compress that over. Let's just take out the button. Save all my changes. You'll see the command the build process, hey, automatically updates for me. I don't need to go through a redeploy cycle. This saves you a lot of time as a developer. This makes you so much more productive. No more, okay, I'm deploying to the SharePoint farm, let's get a coffee. None of that. Faster, more productive, much happier member of society because you're not drinking 5 cups of coffee a day. Cool, so that's a quick overview. One or two other things that I'd like to show you before we jump on to the next demo. You might have noticed up the top here, there are tablet and mobile options. They're helping us build responsively out of the box. So if I click on tablet, I get a tablet view. It tells me it's an iPad. I can also click out wider here and change to a different device width. I'll just make that bigger so I can go to Samsung, Tab, or a Surface Pro 3. Really handy if you've got specific devices you're trying to target to look really good. Kind of cool. All right, let's close that. And we can probably close this one too. So, all right, that was Hello World. Hello World's good. We've looked at what's inside the solution. So, integrating with SharePoint, because, that's cool, but I need to talk to SharePoint. The workbench is designed for us to work offline. We really want to work against SharePoint, but we want to be able to work offline as well. So, we'll take a look at how we use the workbench, and we can build mock data so we can work offline and still build all of our underlying core logic. And we'll look at, I've already done this. I'm not going to walk through this. You need a developer site in your Office 365 tenant. There's a small bit of configuration to the library that you drop the workbench into. If you want to do real deployments and have it running inside a real page as opposed to just the workbench, you need to have an app catalog and somewhere to deploy that compiled JavaScript to. And we'll take a look at how we connect to SharePoint. Okay, so, not that prompt, this one. And all right, because I'm a terrible typist, I'm cheating a little bit. I've got all of the code changes as different branches in a Git repository, so you don't have to sit through me bad typing. Let's open up the world's greatest text editor. Yes, I am a VS Code fanboy. How many of you have tried this tool? Yeah, you guys like it? Like something else better? If you're just doing web stuff, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, TypeScript, I think it's one of the best editors you'll lay your hands on. Okay, so this is basically an empty web part solution just like we saw before. I called it make list because we're going to wind up making a list at the end of this. There's no real changes here. Cool. Because I can't remember. What we want, let's start with how we set up with mock data. So what we're going to do with this demo is basically read all of the SharePoint lists that exist within my site and render them out, because it's easy, available data. Okay, so one of the first changes that we make is we actually add, or I add this two folders, one called models. So I have this thing called an iList, which, hey, it defines a base set of properties about a list. It has an ID, a base template, a description, and a title. We export that so it's available. And then we have this thing called an iLists, which represents the result of a call to get a list of lists or a collection of lists from SharePoint. That's why we have this list array returned as the value property. So, define an interface that all of my data providers will use. At the moment, it just has a simple method called getLists, which takes in the REST URL that's going to be we're going to get the data from, and optional argument of options. Then I define a mock data provider. So this is basically a piece of code that's going to give me a pre-canned set of results every time I call it, just for development purposes, so I can work against the workbench locally. And all I do here is create an array of list items, or items that represent lists rather than items in lists, and use promises. So who's are familiar with like await async in C#? Okay, so we've got asynchronous programming. This is where we say, I want you to do something, but I'm not going to wait for you to do it. I'm just going to continue execution, not block. And when you're ready, come back to me, and I'll accept your answer. In JavaScript and TypeScript, we have this thing called promises that represent that. And you'll see this thing called resolve. And you'll see when we call this, how this works from a consuming perspective. In my web part, this is where things get interesting. Here we go. So this is nice and visible for you guys. Down the back, cool. All right, so at the top of here, we import stuff. So we pull in references from other files. This is like our using section in C#. Same deal. I pull in this environment type thing, which lets me tell whether I'm running locally or in SharePoint. Why has that not updated? Give me one moment here. Okay, that's better. All right, so now I'm importing the stuff that I'm actually using, my web part properties, my lists, etc. And I have this call, render lists async, inside my render method. This render list async is calling my data provider. My data provider, we set up the top here, to be an instance of my new mock data provider. So it's going to give me the same result every time. Kind of boring, but it works. Let's see what that looks like when we pull SharePoint into the mix. Let's just close that, because for some reason my editor is not updating when I make changes behind its back. Okay, so the big change here is we introduce a SharePoint data provider, which has this getLists method, and we introduce the notion of a SharePoint context. Inside our web part, we introduce this if construct inside our constructor. Let's go, am I running locally? Okay, you should use the mock data provider. Am I writing inside SharePoint? Use the thing that knows how to talk to SharePoint. So my code, my consuming code doesn't change. It still just calls idataprovider.getLists. And let's go have a quick look at that here inside my render async method. I'm just going to put a new line in here because that'll make it a little more obvious. So this getLists thing, remember before we talked about that returns a promise of a collection of iList. It has this dot then. So when that thing's ready to come back with its answer, call into this delegate method here, where we pass in our list of responses, our list of lists into this render list, which just generates some HTML for us. Should we see it in action? To build code. You might have noticed as that was building, I'm actually getting some warnings from this thing called TSLint. You know, I've got unused imports, I've got unused properties. These are code smells of things that are going bad. You can actually make the build process go, hey, you've got warnings, I'm going to fail at this point. But for demo purposes, it's a little easier to let that run. So, I'm running in the workbench here. I have a mock list returned from my call. Yeah, it's kind of boring. So I'm going to jump over to my SharePoint site that I set up earlier. Jump into the workbench here. Don't know why that's taking such a long time, but we'll blame it on the internet. Where is my mouse? Touch screen. So I now have, because I'm in SharePoint, I now have all of the out-of-the-box web parts that ship and are compatible with this canvas. I have my custom web part. Now you would have seen a slight blink there. It's gone and got a list, a full list of all of the lists within my SharePoint environment. Well, not all of them. Which ones hasn't it got? The hidden ones. So let's just take a quick look. Hey, Chrome's complaining about things. That's interesting. In our SharePoint data provider, in the method that calls our SharePoint data provider, as it passes it all down, we have this filter that just says, hey, I don't want to see the hidden ones. So we're able to control at a method level what we're actually querying for, which is really handy. Okay, so I'm able to get the list of stuff inside SharePoint. I'm able to make changes to this. What's more useful though is the ability to make changes against my SharePoint environment. You know, I can see what's there, but I really want to actually write data back to SharePoint. So let's stop this. One of the things to note with the workbench is it's configured to look for the code that's running on localhost at the, there's a manifest file that will be served up by your local web server. So if you don't have the local web server running, like now, you will just get an error if you happen to run this. Workbench, it'll go, let's see here, hey, those files I'm looking for. So it's just pre-programmed to look at your local dev environment. So this is a dev tool, it's not for production, but I'll show you what production looks like in a bit. Those and reopen them. So one of the things, you know, what I want to do is create a list. We'll create any list. With our I list item, we've already defined, you know, roughly what a list looks like. It doesn't have all of the properties, but all we need to create a new list. Actually, there's two things you need to create a new list. What are they? A title for your list, and what type of list you're going to create, so the template. So we're going to have this create list method, which is going to read out of a form that we've created, create a new iList item, set the title and the template that we want to use, and away it goes. Create it and then re-render the list of lists. Let's spin that up again. Add this workbench. So now I have this little form that we've added into the code there. And we'll just call it, we'll use the 100 template. Oh, I'm working against the workbench. It tends to help if I actually go work against the workbench in production or in my dev site. The mock data is not really going to do anything for me. So let's try that again. Assuming I got that right. Let's see if we can. It's not happy today. Well, that worked earlier. Demo gods. Apparently I didn't give you their goat this morning. But, you know, creating a list, not that interesting. This isn't very real world. You want to see something slightly more real world? Who use tasks lists every day? Need to get stuff done. Cool. Let's look at a to-do. We'll close that one. Serve this. What I've done here is taken one of the sample web parts that the team have kindly shipped and added a little bit of smarts to it. Okay, so if the command prompt will be nice to me, I'll zoom that in while we wait. Okay, running up some code. Cool, web server's ready. So now I have a to-do web part. And that's popped open. Looks pretty nice. Let's configure it. Because there's no task list in this site, I actually want to create a task list. Because, you know, need somewhere to put this. Added a button to the web part, or the pane here. When I clicked that, that's gone off in the background, made a REST request against SharePoint, provisioned a list called to-do. So now I can have I can add some stuff to my list. Did that. So now this is actually writing data into SharePoint in the background, which is kind of handy. This actually allows us to make changes to our SharePoint data, which ultimately is mostly what we're going to do when we start building web parts. All that and pulling in data from other places to make interesting displays for people. Anybody interested in how that code works?
Yep.
All right. So, that is the old set of code. This is the one we're after. What we do here is, I've opened up the SharePoint data provider already. That's handy. We expose this create task list method on our data provider up to the web part. And here you can see we create a REST request. We set up some headers, which we don't use because I was having some problems with that. And all we do is use a web part context. So this is provided by the framework. This web part context has an HTTP client, so it knows how to do gets, patches, puts. It allows for OData batching if you're using OData style requests. So we can post the list template object that we've got that's called todo using the 171 template, which I know is the task list, and then once it's done, it's done. Pretty simple, kind of cool. I'm going to check this into my GitHub if you want to have a look at it. This example is good because it also gives you the ability to look at how it creates list items and retrieves list items. So that'll all be up on GitHub, whack Gavin Barron. It's also available under the SharePoint repository. It just won't have the list creation step. The one thing that I would call out with this one is this is actually using React rather than any other framework, and there's just a couple of things you have to do to wire up that button. First of all, we need to pull in the property pane button type so it's available for us to use. We have this chunk of code here, so if we have no task list, we add a new property pane button, which we wire up to this create list method that we've got, which in turn calls down to that data provider. There's one little tricky piece you've got to do to make this work properly, and that's up here. You need to have these calls to bind that callback to this particular object. Otherwise, you'll click it and it won't, you'll go, it can't find this, this is undefined. A little bit of a pain, but relatively simple. So, there you go. That's a web part that's able to provision the list that it needs. So, in theory, you could actually use this, this onInits method here to do that provisioning for you. So silently provision any lists, content types, content that you need out of the box for your web part to operate properly within SharePoint. The onInit method's part of the spec. You just have to make sure you follow the signature so it returns a promise of type void. Okay, back to the slides. So we connected to SharePoint and got data in and set data out. We set up some resources in SharePoint. So other data sources. What other data sources might you want to pull data in this kind of solution? An external REST API? Yeah, absolutely. Any other ones that you know, we're in Office 365. On-premises stuff, yeah. I mean, if it's addressable, you could. The graph is the one that most people ask you about. Yes, you can. And, you should do these things if it makes sense. Anything that you can address over HTTP, you can get. So you've got an HTTP client that can make requests for you. you know, external data to enhance SharePoint, it's a great idea. You know, pulling in the current stock price is a good one. Pulling in weather data is, you know, very common scenario. But there's always a but in this scenario, isn't there? You need to think about security. And I'm not kidding. This is a big deal. If you start using the Microsoft Graph in particular, as things stand right now, if you have web parts developed by another vendor in that environment, I would highly recommend you don't. Because of the way that JavaScript operates, it has to have the token that's required to authenticate against the graph. If that's available to the executing code, it's available to any executing code in that page. So theoretically, that nice weather web part that you downloaded and installed could, worst case scenario, lift your CEO's emails. Be bad. So take some care. Who's played with the graph and OAuth? Basically, you get a special token that says, I am me, I'm authorized to see this stuff. In JavaScript, it's held in some storage within the browser, either session storage or local storage, vulnerable to cross-site scripting attacks, could be picked up by other code running in the page. If you get that token, you can replay it and reuse it for its lifetime. So it can be very risky, but if you're in a controlled environment where the code that's going in there is only developed by your organization, go for it. Horses for courses. All right, we covered a lot of ground. Saw a lot of code. Hopefully you weren't too bored by it. I don't see anyone sleeping. That's a good sign. All right, so the SharePoint framework, it's a new way of doing things. I realize that for some people that's kind of scary. For me, that's exciting. I get to learn new stuff, and I like that. Go out, start researching this stuff now because it is happening. You know, Microsoft have no plans to completely remove the ability to run full trust solutions in an on-premises scenario, but everything's moving to the cloud. So, and they're taking away the sandbox. This is our new way of developing. You should start learning this stuff. You saw how quick changes were to see in the development environment. That's great with the local workbench. You have to hit F5 when you're up in SharePoint, unfortunately, but it's still a lot faster than waiting for the solution to retract the old one and deploy the new one and activate all the features. I think it's really fun and productive. If you're integrating with external data, be really careful. Think about your potential holes and flaws. SPDocs is the repository on GitHub that will have everything you need to get started. All of the code that I showed earlier that walks through setup, it's all up there. And they do some really nice pictures. So, questions? Andy?
The diagram that you get, the tools comparison, is that also inside SPDoc?
I don't think it is. I actually got it from Chax. He used it at Ignite in Chicago. Very kindly gave me that one. But yeah, you're more than welcome to the slides.
Okay.
Yeah.
How opinionated is it about the tools?
Oh, absolutely. So I went to Dev Kitchen 1. There was some folks from Vancouver there. They're already using Babel in their processes. They replaced the TypeScript compile step with a Babel compile step. So, you know, if you know what you're doing, the gulp process is extensible, and you can patch it. You don't have to use gulp. That's just what ships out of the box. It uses Webpack as a packaging framework. It's really, you know, if you want to do something different, you can. This is just what Microsoft is shipping as the initial versions, and it's really very productive. So, yeah. Good question. So the app model still is going to stick around. There are scenarios where the app model is the right answer. you know, I was mentioning things like security being a problem in JavaScript. Now, to be clear, the graph problem, Microsoft are actively working on a way to ensure that tokens acquired by one framework web part would be scoped to that web part. That's active work that they're working on, but there are scenarios where the add-in model is still the absolute correct way to do things. This all runs in the browser, so if you want to have stuff that's running in a, you know, server side on a remote box somewhere, the add-in model's your friend there. You can definitely use remote APIs to augment this process, but there are scenarios where the add-in model is your friend, and it's probably the easiest way of reaching a wide audience. There is a store experience planned for framework web parts. It's still forthcoming, though. No problem. Any other questions? Thank you, guys. It's been fun.